hinges creak in doorless chambers, and strange and frightening sounds echo through the halls whenever candlelights flicker. Where the air is deathly still, that is the time when ghosts are present, practicing their terror with ghoulish delight. There's no turning back now.
Just after sundown, when darkness creeps over the land, the dark figures lurk in the shadows. The fangs glisten in the moonlight, and the ghosts of the world become restless. We begin our journey. Join us as we travel into the world of the paranormal, the supernatural, and the bizarre on Night Watch with your host, Todd Sheets.
And welcome to Night Watch. I'm your host, as always, Todd Sheets, here with my wonderful co-host, Hugh McClanahan.
Yeah.
Do you like how I put a little musical spin on there for you? Kind of made you feel good. And Chris Weisbach.
Oh, thank you, Todd.
I gave you the old sports announcer kind of thing going on. Right here, live from Wrigley Field, Chris Weisbach.
Oh, I like it.
And he's back this week.
Yeah, he's back. He's not virtually here for a change.
Got half my face removed.
That's right.
At the dentist. Now I'm good.
Now you're good. You're good. Now you know, good. That's the thing, though. When you're Yeah, I'm not even going to go into that too much yet. But I will say, when you're not here, it's better that you are here because you never know what I'll play. You could be saying any word.
That's true.
I pick a word at random. Donuts.
I got to be here to watch over him.
That's right. Keep an eye on me. That's right. You got to keep an eye. Well, I am so excited about tonight's show because our first guest tonight, I had the pleasure of meeting in person, and I think I drove him crazy because I just spoke to him for long amounts of time. I wouldn't leave. I was just so happy to talk to him. And a lot of people may know him from the films he does: Unstoppable, Rango, Waitress, Halloween, The Devil's Rejects. Halloween, of course, being the Rob Zombie version, and Domino, among many others. He's going to talk to us about all that. And he's talking to us live from a world premiere DVD event that they're doing tonight at Dark Delicacies, one of my favorite bookstores there in Burbank, California. Last time I was there, I was telling you guys, I hung out with Clive Barker. He was just there.
Yeah.
Just having a good time hanging out. But Lou Temple is here. Lou, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. So it's so exciting to be here with y'all and to be invited. I have to say it's a great show, and it's a real honor to be part of it. So I'm excited, and plus we're all friends. It's always good to have a chin wag with friends. So
true,
indeed,
very true.
Let's do it. That's good. And all, and when I say friends, I don't. Definitely not talking about the three of you, but listening. There's a lot of people listening. I told everyone I know, four other people that I know besides you three, that I was going to be on the show tonight.
Well, and, thank you, Lou. Click.
Yeah, thank there call. We go. There's,
thanks for not being our friends.
You can hang up now, I guess. No, it's really great to be able to have a visit with your far-reaching tentacles of media out there in your live cast. So, thanks for having me. Dark Delicacy tonight. The movie is Silent Night, Zombie Night, which is it is a horror genre feature, and it's great. It can cover this month of October for Halloween parties, and then it carries over into the Christmas bent. It's as I was telling y'all, it's 28 Days Later meets Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid with a wink to It's a Wonderful Life. So you can put it in that Christmas stocking after you take it out of your Halloween grab bag.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like it's kind of got a little bit of everything in that movie.
It does. I was happy because I got to do something a little different in it that I don't normally get to do, and which was just it was great for me, and it was just different and in a real subtle way. So I'll encourage everyone to pick it up. I believe you can grab it at Amazon or any of your retail stores, and that's my first pitch for the night. That's my first pimp for the night is Silent Night, Zombie Night.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And what a good deal it is. And everyone, I do know it's also going to be available here in the Midwest at Family Video. I know they're going to be carrying it, so you got to rush out and check that out because Lou is involved. And if Lou's involved, it's got to be a quality product, I say.
How can you go wrong with zombies and It's a Wonderful Life?
Yeah, well,
it seems
scary.
It seems ideal, doesn't it? And anyone that's in California, by the way, and when I say that, I guess I would mean the Los Angeles area, that wants to come out and say hello, come on over. I'll be here till about 10 o'clock Pacific Coast time here, and I'll be happy to sign something for you for free.
Wow. That's Lou for you right there. See, that's what it's all about right there, man. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
As you said, Dark Delicacies is a fantastic place, and it's got all the trimmings right now as we're in October, which is their big month. But they're good all year round, aren't they, Todd?
They are. They're fantastic. I mean, anytime you go in there, you never know what you're going to get. It's a surprise. And if you want horror, that's the place to go, because if they don't have it, chances are they can get it. So there you go.
Yes, yes. And they're fun people. And you never know who you're going to run into over here.
That is true. That is true at any given time, for sure, for sure. Now, Lou, you're well known to people like myself for your work in genre films like, you know, Rob Zombie's Halloween, The Devil's Rejects, and things of that nature. But also, Domino is such an underrated film, and it wasn't doing as well as I thought it should at the box office. And, you know, I checked it out, and I was like, wow, this movie should be gangbusters. First of all, it's directed by Tony Scott. Second of all, I mean, it's got this cast, this unbelievable cast. And that's the thing that I thought, you know, Christopher Walken and Keira Knightley in the same movie, that's pretty cool.
It was cool and weird among, you know, and throw Mickey Rourke in there.
Yep.
It was like being in purgatory, because it was beautiful and possessed at the same time. I like to reference it as Tony Scott's rock and roll exorcism. He pulled out all the stops, and it was a very good movie. It is a very good movie, and it actually has a really great kind of classic cult following. We took a lot of time. I mean, we were 3 months on that one, and working for Tony Scott is like, I always reference, is like going to work for Willy Wonka, or hanging out with your crazy uncle in the 70s who had the cool car and a gun in the trunk, and he'd take you out and let you drive and shoot. And I mean, Tony has helicopters and cameras everywhere, and it is on 10 when you show up on set, and you better be ready to go, because he is. And so it's Fast and Furious going to work with him. And it was great, because it was very rock and roll, and it had a good tone to it. Kira was lovely. I want to say it was probably her, you know, her first venture before she swung out to do Pirates, which would be another action movie, I suppose, but into really getting down and dirty, you know, roughing it up a little bit. And Mickey Rourke was great. You know, he's for real. And there was another young fella on the set who was fantastic, Edgar Ramirez, who's just a lovely actor, and we've seen him really show up a lot in the last couple of years, and the great work that he does. And Chris Walken was, you know, fantastic. He's amazing. You know, he's an interesting guy. No, keep the camera running. Let me just try one more here. Tony, no. Here. Ah. Look, I'm a sea monster. You know, it's just like,
hey,
what's going on?
Leave it running. Hey, I got to do it. I got to take.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. You know him. We all know him.
What a great guy. Yeah.
I love it, man. I love that.
He's fun. And that was a good movie. Domino Harvey, who the movie was about, daughter of Lawrence Harvey, was in and out of the production, and she was on set often. And I got to spend a lot of time with her. In fact, I spent New Year's Eve with her.
Wow.
And seemed like things were going to be okay. And then, you know, a month later, she was gone of a drug overdose.
Man, that's
and,
sad.
And that was unfortunate because she was really an interesting, lovely person. It was, you know, there were so many people. I met Brian Austin Green on that shoot. And we became fast friends. And there was this little girl that was hanging out, and they were dating, and he's like, I don't know, she's so young. And now they're married, Megan Fox. and she was such a young person, and she still is. I mean, come on. But that was really fun. And Brian's a good dude, and he's done well, you know, out of that whole group. I guess all those 90210 guys have sort of found their way a little bit. Yeah, that's a tough thing to shake. You know, I'm thankful that I'm able to cross over and do Domino and Unstoppable and still maintain a presence in the horror genre and even slip out and do a romantic comedy in the form of Waitress that was probably more than a romantic comedy. That's probably selling it a little short. But it would be difficult to be tied down to something that you had done for so long, like those guys did, or anyone did in the 80s or 90s on a TV show.
Right.
Cut to Johnny Depp didn't let that drag him down, did it? He figured that out quick.
Yeah, that's true. Johnny's still out there kicking it, man. He's, as a matter of fact, he surprised you. Oh, go ahead.
He's amazing. He's such a lot of fun, and he's so interesting just to watch. And he's beautiful. I'm married with a child, but while I was doing Rango, I would look at him and I would tear into his eyes, and I said, you know, I'm a married man, but I think I'm falling for you, dude. Yeah.
You heard it here.
That happened. Yeah. But it's your line, Lou. It's your line. Your turn. Oh, shoot. Yeah. Okay. Can't imagine being having to be his love interest in a film. My goodness, he's like really great. He's a really good guy. He's a real guy.
That's true. I can't believe he got his start in like Nightmare on Elm Street.
Weird. I can't believe that I spent more time talking about Johnny that way than I did Kira or Megan. Come on.
The reason why you do that is because Johnny leaves an impression that I have to say, though, Keira Knightley, you know, we were talking about this being one of her first breakout roles. Do you know the first time that I realized I was in shock? Keira Knightley was actually Senator Amidala's decoys in the movie. And of course, I'm bringing it back, guys. Star Wars.
The Star Wars connection.
The Star Wars connection is there because Keira Knightley played one of the decoys there. She was often in the role of the senator because the senator would be dressed up as one of her little aides on the side, and she would play the senator in the film. I don't know how many people knew that, but that was Keira Knightley.
Interesting.
That was that is news to me. That is news. But she's so talented. You know, besides being beautiful, she's an amazing talented person that I think is it makes all the right choices. You know, there's she shows up and does a great job in everything she does. She learned to shoot and you know, drive and fight and martial arts and strip and all kinds of important things to be a movie starlet. You know who else is on that film that was great? Was Monique. And I would have never thought that, you know, the time that I spent with her, that she would end up being dramatic as much as she was in Precious, which was a great turn of role. Also, Macy Gray was there, which was a lot of fun. She was great. And there was all manner of people. There's a number of great, really great people in that cast.
I agree.
Tom Waits. Tom Waits was there. most artistic man, and I say this without absolutely the most artistic person I've been around. Not just musically or in performance, but just he's always riffing. His mind is always working on prose and conceptual thought. And we were out in the desert in the Valley of Fire in Las Vegas, and he was sitting there, and I was sitting there, and I picked up a rock and threw it, and he said, "You know, that rock has probably been there 2,000 years next to the other three rocks that are probably family members. You just broke up a happy home." You know, and I didn't know what to do except go pick up the other three rocks and throw them out towards
toss them out.
The one that I just threw. But he's amazing. I'm thrilled that I got to be around him for a little bit.
Wow.
That is awesome.
Yeah, Tom Waits. There's one for the Waits book.
Exactly. And I'm gonna move to Waitress because you mentioned that, and I wanted to let everyone know that movie. I don't think anyone expected that movie
it's
to be.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, Keri Russell is just, no one knew from her television work that she had the amount of depth that she had, and all of a sudden it's like, bam! This movie came out, and I loved it. I loved everything about it.
Yeah.
You know, when you say that, it's the absolute truth that nobody knew what a delightful film that this was going to be, and that included all the cast. The only person I think that really knew was Adrienne Shelley, God rest her soul. And for those of you listening that don't know, Adrienne was a young actress, a very fantastic, talented, lovely actress that was also a writer and director, and she wrote and directed and starred in the movie. She had been an indie darling in the New York scene. Hal Hartley particularly loved to use her, and she put together this film and brought us all together. And again, an amazing cast, just a fantastic cast. And at the time, I was up for two other movies, personally, and they were big films. One was There Will Be Blood, which I was absolutely positive I was going to do. I had met with him and Mr. Anderson, Paul Thomas, for, you know, a couple times, and my picture was on his wall, and I was certain I was going to do that. And the other was No Country for Old Men, where I meet with the Coens almost on all of theirs, and it seemed like that was going to happen as well, and I had good feedback that was going to be happening. So when I got a call that I got a job, I just knew it was one of those two, and they said, you got a job in Waitress. And I was like, kind of a little movie, it's a sweet little movie, and I don't know, I think it's going to get in the way of these other possible two. And my agent advised me, he said, well, that it may be, I'm not saying you're not getting those other two, but this is really a great job and a great cast, and I think you should take it. And for once I listened to my agent. I never got an offer from There Will Be Blood or from No Country for Old Men, and I'm so proud to be part of the Waitress delight. You know, it was such a lovely film. Absolutely. To finish the story with Adrienne Shelley, for those of you listening who don't know, unfortunately, as she was finishing the film in October, the end of October, before the film was to premiere at Sundance, 2005. She was murdered in her apartment. She got in an argument with a maintenance man. He was a fairly young guy. He lost his temper and hit her. And she fell and hit her head, and she was killed. He took her to her apartment several stories up from where the argument was and hung her from the bathroom stall to make it look as if it was a suicide. And of course, her husband, Andy Austral, just wouldn't refuse to to accept that and put out a an investigation, and they finally were able to to solve that mystery. And so nobody had really seen the film until we saw it in Sundance. And there must have been, I guess, it was in the big, it's a big theater. There's probably 1,500 people, and everybody in Sundance was there, and including Adrian's family. And just amongst the tears and the sorrow of this beautiful, lovely rose of a film rose up and it showed itself to all of us, and it was sort of a ray of light. And I think that was Adrian, and it is that kind of movie. And we were all just blown away by the end result of what that film was.
Well, I would agree. Yeah. I mean, and the thing I love about this, Lou, as we're talking to you about this, it really shows, and I know all of our friends out there listening can hear it in your voice, that there's a real love for filmmaking here. And it's not just a job. It's also, it's a connection to you spiritually. And I mean, this, she will live forever in this film, you know, and it really does bring you that light. I believe that fully and 100%. I agree with you.
Everyone knows what this feeling is when you come home from college, for instance, and you, for the holidays, whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas, and you come home and you see your parents and you get some good home cooked food and you go and meet your friends, and there's just that feeling. And that's what it was like going to set every day. It was just that good family, warm, I'm in the right place feeling. And it was really an amazing time. I probably got married because of Adrian Shelley. I mean, I was dating my wife at the time, and I was not sure. And Adrian took real time and real pains to talk to me about, like, you got to be sure about if you're going to get married. And almost the entire cast had babies shortly after. I had a child the year after marriage, and Eddie Jemison, Cheryl Hines, Carrie Russell, Jeremy Sisto finally got married. Nathan's still out there. I think Nathan's still lone wolfing it, Nathan Fillion. He's too good a bachelor, I think, to shut it down.
There you go.
I'm sure that he could if he wanted. There's no doubt about it. But that group, just incredible. And then to get to work with Andy Griffith.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the voice of America. He's America's father. And he was so spot on. In rehearsals, he had these long exhortations and these speeches. And he was pitch perfect every time out. And when he would do it, it was like listening to E.F. Hutton, And it was great. It was just, and that was, again, a delight and an honor.
Well, yeah. Anytime you get to work with someone of that magnitude, and Andy Griffith is one of my favorites to this day. If I'm going through stations and I happen to see Barney running around, Edge, I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Stop. I got to see what's going on.
Yep.
What's Barney up to?
Some good advice here.
Yep.
We could all use a little of that good advice. Isn't that something?
It is.
So that's, you look at someone's career and just the nicest guy, like so many people that, we get to meet and in our industry, and you really figure out that the world's about nice people.
Yeah,
we play a lot of bad things and do a lot of things that are a little conflicted in the human soul or spirit. But for the most part, just a lot of nice people.
Yeah, and it sounds like you were really emotionally attached to that movie. Like, that really helps making it better.
Yeah.
It does. Everybody was. And, Adrian, and she really is, she was just a delightful spirit. She was focused and firm about what, I mean, there might have been a couple of improv lines. I might have thrown in a couple of quips. But she knew to the letter what was needed, what her film was going to be, and she directed it as such. She was not a patsy on set. That's not to say she was a hard ass or anything of that nature. She was just really a great director. We lost a great person, but we gained an amazing film, but we lost a great artist and a director as well. The speech that I was able to do about being happy. Are you happy? I'm happy enough. I don't ask for much. I don't give much. I don't get much. I generally just take what comes along, and that makes me happy. You know, I kind of sculpted that and had a take on it as to what I was going to do with the delivery, and I did it, and she was very pleased and pulled me aside and said, "It was so good, thank you." And she goes, "I just wonder if perhaps we could try one knowing, like a great coach or a manager, could we try one where nobody had ever asked you that in your entire life, and it catches you off guard?" And bang, that was so it. That was so spot on as to what it needed to be.
Indeed.
And without her, I probably would not have found that.
Yeah.
And that's a great director. And what I love about the work that we get to do on set is those types of moments when you go, aha.
That's true.
You get it, and you just got me to get it. And as a director or another actor, or it could be any manner of things, and immediately you build a trust so quickly. Whereas in, you know, life, day to day, you know, I don't really trust the people driving a car, you know.
Yeah.
You're driving missiles at me, you know,
exactly. Yeah.
And, you don't get as much chance to really go out and have faith and trust and give it over to someone. I mean, we go through relationships where we spend half the time just trying to build trust.
Yeah.
And on a movie set, it comes very quickly, and you avail yourself to it. And I appreciate that. It's a really a gift I would like everyone to experience.
What do you think your top five movies would be that you've been in?
I would say Waitress number one for all the things that we just talked about.
Yep.
And it's a great movie. I'd say Unstoppable number two, because it was a great movie for all the reasons it was supposed to be, and for me personally, it was fantastic. It was a great role that a director and a producer and a studio allowed me off the leash, off the page, to go and do something that I thought it would land, and they bought in and trusted me. And that was a great experience. I have a very small part in 21 Grams, and most of it was cut out, but that was a fantastic movie. That I'm so proud of that film. Devil's Rejects. I enjoyed Devil's Rejects for every emotional, you know, I think it's dark. I think it's comedic. I think it's real. I think it's gritty. I think it's a story. I love that Rob was able to build arcs for every character in that movie that you wanted to see and got to see a lot of their life. And I thought that was really special. So that definitely plays. And, where are we at? Four?
Yeah, that was four.
And Rango. I think Rango is a great movie. I think Rango has, it's shot amazing. The cinematography is great. It's a great feel. It's very adult. It may not be for my 3-year-old, but it's lovely for people that are taking their 10-year-olds, you know. So
it's such
I'm
a nice
very proud to be.
Yeah, it's such a nice surprise when you take your kid to see a, you know, an animated movie, and you enjoy it just as much as they do. And that's
yeah,
what I got out of Rango.
And I think that was Gore's intent. Gore was, I don't think he was ever intending to make a full-on children's animated feature. I think, and that's I don't know, but I think that's probably where he'll begin and end with that. I don't think we'll see it Rango 2 from him necessarily.
Right.
I don't know that. I'd love to continue with that, but I think he was able to do what he wanted and build that. And that was a lot of work from day one, him doing all the voices in animatics, and then finding the right mix and the right song and when I say that, I mean the characters, the players, and also what an amazing cast that was.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm really proud to be attached to that as well.
Well, here's the big thing for me, Lou. We love your work. Matter of fact, I think when I was talking to you, I said you kind of remind me of a chameleon because you can be any part and you can really fit into anything. But the big thing is we are very lucky to have Lou because Lou almost... He was diagnosed with leukemia, if I remember this right, Lou, and you almost weren't able to do these movies for us.
A near-death experience, I think, even maybe.
It was. And thank you. Thank you so much for the kind words, and thank you so much for actually bringing that up, because that's real life, and that was, and there was a happy ending. And so I guess what I would want people to know is that there are happy endings and there is a happy ending. I was diagnosed with leukemia. I had been feeling just awful for a year, and I'm a typical guy. I'd take my car into the shop before I'd take myself in. And finally I was on a movie set and I just expired. I got fired because the producers said, well, you know, he looks terrible. And he's lethargic, and he's just not the animated spirit that we hired. And my agent said, are you sick? And I said, yeah, I think I have a bronchitis or a lung infection or something, you know. And, you know, the next day I was yellow with jaundice. And my best friend, I was in Houston, Texas at the time, he took me to the emergency room. I said, all right, I'm going, but I'm not spending the night. Well, I didn't spend the night. I spent the next 4 months. After being diagnosed, fighting for my life. And it was such an experience, and not just for me, but for all those people that were my caretakers, all my friends and my family and everybody that was pulling and worrying with, you know, all their heart and concern. It was a real life experience, and there was many times that it was touch and go. There are many times my parents were brought in to say goodbye. There are many times I had to say goodbye to people and let them know I don't know that you'll see me again, and I'm wishing you a peaceful journey. And somehow I got through it. My faith in God and amazing physicians, I was blessed. And I wouldn't want anyone to go through that experience, but I would wish everyone could have that perspective. And it's frustrating at times when I get angry at traffic and I have to remind myself what a blessing to be here.
Yeah.
You know? And so I do have that. And as interesting as anything, there was a girl in Hollywood living below me. I'd never even seen her before. It was very Breakfast at Tiffany's. And I went to the building manager's door one day to invite him to a baseball game. And she was standing there. And I said something and with my Southern accent. And she said, are you for real? Being a Brit. And I said, yeah, what about you? How about your accent? And the building manager called me up and he said, he's New York guy. Yeah. Hey, Louie, you know, not for nothing, but I see you two standing there and a light bulb goes off in my head. And I think that maybe there's something there. And so I said, oh, and he says, you know, you do yourself a favor and take her to lunch or something. So we did. And, we were trying to figure out what we shared, and it turns out that she had leukemia at Cedars-Sinai Hospital, the same time as I had leukemia and was being treated at MD Anderson in Houston. And I'd never met an adult leukemia survivor in my life. I thought I was the only one, you know? It was like being a superhero and finding someone else that was as well. And we immediately had that kindred spirit, and we recognized that we had both laid in hospital beds, and our tomorrows had been taken away, and our yesterdays didn't mean anything, and today was the only thing that mattered, and we recognized that in each other. And we wed, you know, we were married, and we were both told that we wouldn't, with as much radiation and chemo as we had been exposed to, that we wouldn't have children. And a year later, we had a miracle baby with no effort at all.
I mean, wow.
And the child, you know, and so every child is a blessing, but we always feel like ours is a real blessing. My take on it is and we spend a lot of time with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. We spend a lot of time reaching out in outreach programs to people that are suffering. Both my wife and I, we take on anyone that's out there. And, you know, people say, I've got cancer. And I say, well, you know what? It's not a four-letter word. It's a six-letter word, I think. And it's going to be okay. You're going to get through it. That's my first take on everything.
Yep.
And that's where we start on it.
Yeah.
And
because I've got a cousin with leukemia as well.
Wow.
And she has blood transfusions, you know, every month.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So. Yeah, it's a fight. You know, it's a mental preparation as much as anything. It's difficult on those that are taking care of, not just those that are experiencing it, but those that are worrying so much and trying to do so much. It's difficult, but there's hope, and there's so much being done, and so much medically and technologically advancing us on getting through it and getting well. And I'm just a big advocate of winning and surviving, because I'm living proof, and my wife is too.
Yeah, you've got to think so positive.
You have to have a good outlook, and you have to,
and it shows,
you have to recognize that.
Yeah.
There's a chance.
It shows in your acting. I mean, you know, you have sometimes a little diversity is a good thing. You know, maybe not leukemia is a good thing, but as far as a character building, you know, looking at life in a different way.
Well, yeah, you bring this positivity to it. I mean, even you're playing like a character, like you said, actors are called on to play characters that are sometimes ugly characters, or maybe do things that aren't so nice. There's still this positivity in you, Lou, and in your performance that's very infectious. And even being in the room with you here in town when we were hanging out, it was like this energy just pouring off of you, man. It was like it was life itself.
Well, I so appreciate that, and I do try to keep a positive outlook, because I've been so blessed that I've been able to come through and have a chance to be able to, you know, experience my daughter, to experience, you know, experience life. And and you know, like you say, it is a perspective, and it's something I wished everybody would be able to have, but you know, not experience it in such difficult times as laying in a hospital bed trying to survive. You mentioned about playing characters in Halloween. The character that I played, Noel Klugs, if you've seen Rob's cut, the director's cut, and the rape scene that I had to do, that was very difficult for me, because that's not natural. I've never done that, although I'm sure there's some dates that may disagree, but Malcolm McDowell was a really great source of inspiration there. He told me that, you know, this is your job. If you have to play Adolf Hitler, you'll do it a plum. And I'm signing some photos for our fans here. What's your name? Ryan. Ryan, you want this to you?
That is okay. Awesome.
Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
You're on radio right now all over the world, Ryan. So Malcolm McDowell was a, come on, where he's come from, you know, with Kubrick, you know, he's had such an experience that he's able, you know, to draw on that, and he recognizes what that is. And, you know, he was able to really give me some real support when I needed it, as well as Rob. I'll tell you, in that scene alone, you know, Rob just would let me know, you know, whatever you need to get through this, I'll be there. Whether you want a close set or you want music or whatever you need, just let me know. And he was great. He was great that way. And Rob is great that way. You know, Rob's such a, you know, he's such an enthusiast for his work, and he's so focused on what he needs and what he wants. I always like to say that, you know, Rob Zombie knows what he wants and wants what he knows, and there's not any real gray area with that at all. I just think he's a fantastic storyteller. I think he could direct and write just about anything that he would set his mind to. And I think that's one of the beauties with his work, you know, and he's so passionate about his work, and he's so focused. He's, you know, he works, you guys know him, and he really puts it out there.
Well, before we run out of time, I also want to get something in here. I didn't want to cut your thought off, but I want to talk to you a little bit about your music, because that's awesome.
Thank you. I've enjoyed that so much. And Rob was a big part of, you know, I'd always dabbled and played a little bit in bands. And he said, you know, at the time we were doing Devil's Rejects, he offered that it'd be so great if we put this album out with your character as a country, you know, this country band, and kind of put it out as an actual band. And at the time, he had a radio show on 103 here in town that he DJed, and he, you know, I went and wrote, I guess I wrote 8-9 songs with my buddy Jesse Dayton, and we put it together. We went in to Rob, and we pitched it, and there was a record executive there from Universal, and we got a record deal. So we put it out, and people would call into the show and say, oh, yeah, I saw Banjo and Sullivan in 1972, 68. They're playing with the Allman Brothers, opened up real left-thinking group of country rockers, you know, and... Wow. Then the movie comes out, wah, 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 you know, but that was such fun. And I try to write a song for every movie that I'm in. They don't always make it. You know, sometimes I have to deal with people like Hans Zimmer, who's got a little higher pay grade than me. And I wrote one for Rango and for Unstoppable, and he happened to be on both. You know, we'll see where those end up, but I have enjoyed that, and I like to write songs, and I like to write songs about the things that I'm doing, and you know, because you live with them for 3 months, and you pick up a rhythm of what you're doing, and it just fits. You know, I can write a song about a train as being a personality and being the beast that is unleashed. And so, I enjoy that. I enjoy that so much. And I look to keep doing that. And I like to, you know, venture out outside of country and do something very rock and roll, or do something a little reggae, or, you know, I want to go write a rap song with Heavy D.
There you go.
And just kind of keep it moving. It's an outlet. It's another creative outlet that I think, that we all have that propensity to do, and I like to just, you know, keep those types of muscles working.
Well, yeah, yeah. And that's the thing about you, multifaceted man. Not only are you a great guy, I mean, a great person just to sit and talk to. I mean, you've fought through hell and the devil and come back to talk about it, known as leukemia, and you have done these amazing movies, and you also do this just hilarious music that I just fell in love with, and also you do serious music. So that's the thing. You've got a little bit of everything going on, Lou, and it's just been such a pleasure to have you on this show, because I think a lot of our friends out there are going to wake up to the magic of Lou Temple.
I so appreciate it, and I appreciate the time that y'all have allowed me, and you know, I'm excited about the things to come. I just finished up a project called Saving Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln's story. I'm hoping that Lone Ranger gets moving again.
Oh, yeah.
That we can get into that. There's a couple of cool projects that I'm looking into. One's called Suckerville, which is kind of a horror comedy that I'd like to go do. And, I'm still thinking I might throw into Django Unchained with Tarantino.
Oh yeah.
So I'm trying to keep it moving. And I think in December there's a film coming out called The Wettest County by John Hillcoat, which is a bootlegging film starring Tom Hardy and Jessica Chastain and Mia Wasikowska and Gary Oldman and Guy Pearce.
Wow.
And oh yeah, that kid Shia LaBeouf. I forgot. How could you forget him?
That's right.
So that could be really cool as well. And
yeah.
So keep your eyes out for that. And hey, man, if anyone's got anything out there, you know, go yell at Todd and Chris and you know,
the
let me
guy.
Know what's out
the
there.
The other guy,
the Scottish guy, that damn Scotsman.
It's been great, Lou.
Well, thanks so much, Todd. I appreciate it, and it was so good to be in Night Watch. Things that go bump in the night, and I'm one of those things.
That's right. Thank you, my
Sometimes
friend.
Sometimes I'm a little inebriated. Sometimes it's just getting up to see what my daughter's crying about. But either way, I'll bump into it. Y'all do great. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh, all yeah, right. Man.
Very good.
Good luck with your good luck with your premiere there.
Yep. They're all here. Lots of fans of the show.
Good. Woo-hoo. Yeah. All right. Take care,
all
my
right.
friend. Bye-bye.
Okay. Very good. So long.
Live from Dark Delicacies. You can't get cooler than that.
Poor Hugh. He just, you know.
Denied.
I guess it's better than Rue McClanahan.
Rue McClanahan.
Rue McClanahan.
That was fantastic. I'd also like to let everyone know that Violet, our chat mistress, is doing much better. And, she had a mild stroke, so that was pretty pretty frightening. But she's coming back, and she's coming back strong. I guess she's having a little bit of vision impairment. But other than that, everything's going good. And so our hearts and our souls here go out to Violet and her lovely daughter, Ash. And I want to say, you know, we're glad you're still here with us, Violet. And next time you have a problem like that and don't let us know, we will come to California and kick your tail.
Yeah.
So we are going to go to break because our good buddy Jay LaRose is coming on next. You've got to stay with us because we're going to talk about all the cool stuff Jay LaRose has been doing as well. All right, we will be back right after this.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Tom Atkins. You're listening to Night Watch. Thrill me, man.
It's almost time, kids. The clock is ticking. Be in front of your TV sets for the horror-thon. And remember the big giveaway at 9. Don't miss it. And don't forget to wear your masks. The clock is ticking. It's almost time.
Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Super Shamrock. Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Super Shamrock.
And now, back to Night Watch.
Yoda, this is And Listening to Night Watch, you are, and will continue to do. Foreseen it. I have. Yeah.
Night Watch, a Jackalope Media production, with your hosts, Todd Sheets, Hugh McClanahan, and Chris Weisbach.
Welcome back to Night Watch. I'm your host, as always, Todd Sheets, here with Hugh McClanahan, or the Scotsman that shall not be named. And Chris Weisbach,
Thanks for the echo again. It's awesome.
That's
what
right.
What was that show with John Cusack where they were drag racing? I love that show. I can't think of the name of it.
Better Off Dead.
Yes, I love that show.
Oh, it's on Blu-ray. I had to grab the Blu-ray.
Just I want it too.
I love it. The Asian guys pull up next to him. They're like, and we're roadside with Howard Cosell. I was like cracking up, man. That was great. What? How do we get on these tangents, man? None of this is important. We're talking to someone really cool.
Yeah.
His scene in Saw 3 to this day is probably the most excruciating scene of the entire Saw series for me to watch. And it is one of those things that just stuck with me. There's one other one that in the last Saw they just did that was close, but it still didn't quite click this one. Plus, he's done a ton of other movies, including the genetic opera, Repo, the genetic opera, which I thought was fantastic. It was a musical horror adventure, and I just loved it. Everybody, welcome to the show. Jay LaRose. Jay?
Hey, what's going on? How are you?
Man, we are great, and it's even better to have you here. We just had Lou Temple. I know you guys know each other, and now we've got the wonderful Jay LaRose here. Jay, tell us a little bit about working on Saw 3. My goodness, man, do you always get that? Do people come to you and go, man, that scene just knocked me out?
My wife's favorite scene of any movie. Actually,
uh-oh.
That scene.
Tell me about it. I do get that a lot. And I got to imagine that a lot of the victims in the Saw franchise, so people that had the privilege of playing the victims, have had people come up to them and tell them. Because there's a lot of creepy ones. But I appreciate that. And yes, I get people coming up. And working on Saw was amazing as an adventure. And then, of course, it was great for my career because it would open the doors to things and introduce me to the world we call horror, the horror genre, as we like to say. And as I think we all know, the horror genre fans are the best fans, in the universe. So it was just a beautiful thing that happened, and I'm forever grateful.
If not for your performance, I don't think it would be so involving. I mean, the thing was, for those of you that don't remember, he was basically kind of held captive by these rings attached to chains in the floor in different areas that were put through various parts of his body. One of them, the one that got me, that really made me cringe, was right through the darn bottom part of your chin, right there. It's like this big loop. Oh my goodness. And it was the way you acted. I mean, because let's be honest, anyone, could stand there with some prosthetics, but you like made us believe this was really happening. And so that's why it gave us nightmares.
It was really happening.
Oh yeah.
It felt like it at times. I mean, actors, we come from the inside and have to imagine ourselves in that position. But no, I mean, I gotta put props to everybody involved with the production. I'd like to think that I did, you know, my part in the team effort, but it is just that it's a you know, definitely a team effort. And the makeup guys, Damon and Francois, are a couple of cats out of Toronto that put all the chains through my skin and did all that piercing and whatnot. And they were just amazing. I mean, it's, you know, if I put on the best performance, but it looked like I had some sort of silly putty on my arms, it would, you know, it wouldn't work. So everything came together. And, of course, with the brilliant direction of Mr. Darren Lynn Bousman, yeah, we came up with some cool stuff. And it felt, you know, I was pretty proud of it. You know, I'm usually not too up on my own stuff. I'm one of those guys. But that one, you know, it was cringing. I'll tell you the coolest part, though, for me, when I was putting on the makeup, people ask, you know, oh, you know, how long is the process? And it was about 3.5 hours, and the guys made me feel, you know, very comfortable, and were always checking in with me, making sure I was okay. Everything was fine. We're chit-chatting. Then I glanced down, and they had just done the Achilles heel. Oh. And I just got all flush, and, you know, because it was like my brain's telling me, or my eyes, you know, are telling my brain that should really hurt and be painful. And so that was probably the creepiest part during the process of getting ready to go. But yeah, it was, you know, back to the team thing. It was a real team effort to make that, to pull that off.
Yeah, that must be really hard to having to, you know, go through that huge long process every time.
Well, lucky for me, I guess, is that we had to shoot that in one day. We had to shoot that entire scene in one day because for continuity purposes, we couldn't really quit one day and then resume the next and try to make everything match with all that blood and you know, mess that was going on. We had to just continue the process. So we got there early for makeup and did the thing, you know, 3.5 hours worth, and then we shot for a good 10, 11 hours until we had everything we needed. And then taking off the stuff is hours and hours. I was picking, you know, rubber junk off me for weeks, actually.
Wow.
It was a long day. But so, you know, when you see these movies or hear about people that are doing these movies with three-hour makeups every day for a month or whatever,
yeah,
that's where you got to go insane, I got to imagine, you know. It wasn't that bad. And it was very interesting and, you know, education for me.
Yeah.
So it was really brilliant.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be interesting, you know, the first time. But if you had to do it every day, it would start tedious.
Like our buddy Doug Bradley, sometimes it was a six-hour deal for the Pinhead thing when they first started doing it. My God. Yeah.
Yeah, and my buddy Mike Rooker, did Slither, and he was telling me, you know, they had to do that every day. And then it got his creature, if you remember from Slither, got more involved and more involved.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
So it actually got longer, you know, the process. I'm not sure what order they shot that in, but I know that it went from, you know, a long time to a really long time.
Yes.
You get to a six-hour makeup for a 30-minute shot.
Yeah. Yeah, 30 seconds.
Well, you open 30 minutes. It's probably more, you know, going to be more hours on top of it. And then, you know, I'll bitch and moan, which I don't because, I, like I said, I enjoyed it. But the crew, you know, they got to be there before we're there and makeup people. And then they got to be there with us to the very end and after we leave. So I always want to put out props to the crew. You know, I get attention and get accolades and whatnot, but the crew is what makes it happen.
A lot of people don't realize how much dedication and work goes into these films. They go and they pay their $10 and they watch it, or their $15 or whatever, and they sit there and then they leave the theater. And I get so frustrated with these armchair, or I like to call them basement critics on the internet these days, because it's so easy to take all this hard work and dedication and just trash it. And even the mainstream critics that say, oh, it's torture porn, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? There's more to it than that, because you guys are legitimately trying to do something a little above the norm, so to speak.
Well, you know, making a movie is hard. I mean, it can be easy. You know, you can make schlock. But, you know, when there's a pride factor, it's going to be seen, you know, and so, you know, there's a concern of how it's going to look. So everybody, I think, really puts in their strongest effort, and it's a very movie sets are very stressful, tense situation because there's so much riding on it. People's, you know, besides the money, it's careers and reputations and things like that. So it tends to be pretty stressful. But you know, when you get something that comes out so good like the Saw films did, and it makes up for all the other stuff. Now, me personally, I just love every moment of it because I feel it's a privilege to be able to be in that business, this business, and you know, and actually have something seen.
Yeah.
So many out there that are made that aren't seen, good and bad. You know, there's reasons they're not seen by the masses, but I just kind of lucked out.
So. Well, that's the thing about the Saw series; they're so inventive. I mean, you know, you didn't get a lot of duplication between the different films. You know.
And with all the back and forth and flashbacks and everything, man, there could have easily been a lot of repetitive issues, but there weren't.
Yeah, no, they really did a nice job on the franchise, and you know, people are always like, oh, you know, and then bam, another year goes by, and another good Saw comes out, and you know, there's some that are better than others in certain people's opinions, but if you ask 10 different people what their favorite Saw is, I think most of them will kind of agree that one, you know, started it all, so they're going to give that its fair share. But then they all like different ones for different reasons, because they all have, although they continued the flow of the story, they all had different feels to them. Even Darren's, you know, Darren did 2, 3, 4, and each one had its own feel to it. There are certain styles that were similar, but the storyline themselves and just the characters and whatnot all varied enough to make it interesting and new, and yet held it together and still was a Saw. You know, Saw moment.
Well, that's what I tell people. Because personally, for me, I loved Halloween 1, I liked Halloween 2, and I loved Halloween 3. I liked them going in this weird direction where it was going to be kind of a whole different kind of thing based on the theme of Halloween, but not with Michael Myers. So when they brought him back, I kind of felt like, those stories meandered a lot for me as a viewer, and I kind of didn't get into them too much. There's one or two I kind of liked, but after 10 sequels, I was like, God, this is so tired, and I'm so frustrated. But I didn't feel that way with Saw. So you know, when people complain, oh man, blah blah blah, I'm like, look, you know what? Go watch the Halloween franchise, then come back. You know,
yeah, all the Saw movies are entertaining.
Yeah, it's not an easy task. So yeah, so Saw's cool.
It's difficult. I agree. Now, let's move along. You were talking about Darren Lynn Bousman, and I don't want to leave that just yet because he also directed something I find brilliant, and that was Repo, the genetic opera.
Yeah, Repo. Repo's an awesome. If you haven't seen Repo, go see it now. It's a romp into the crazy world of rock opera, and I was lucky enough to see the stage version of it like 10, 12 years ago when Darren directed the stage version in West Hollywood, just in a little teeny little shoebox theater, you know, a little small 100-seat theater. And it was such a cool concept at the time. I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. And then, you know, years went by. Darren got Saw 2 and gained a little power and a little money and a little pull. And then I think he always had it in his mind that he wanted to do the film version of it. And so they started working on that. We did a little trailer after Saw 3. We had some crew people that were willing to participate, and we threw together, I didn't do anything. I just showed up and, you know, but I like to pretend like I did something. But no, they put together this this trailer, and it was rough, but it was interesting, and they used that kind of as a vehicle to try to show producers what they had in mind and give them an idea of what's up with that. And you know, things went on, and now we have this wonderful piece called Repo, the Genetic Opera, the movie, and with this crazy cast, from all corners of the world, it seems like, you know, with Sarah Brightman and Anthony Stewart Head and Servino and Hilton and Mosley and Ogre and of course Terrence Zanunich, who was one of the co-writers with Darren Smith, and Alexa Vega, I don't want to forget her, of course. And it's just such a weird but very awesome cast that they threw together and made this beautifully. The music in this is so cool. It's really catchy. You know, some people hate it just because it's not their thing, or they go in with an attitude. But but it's, you'll never see anything else like it. I got to say that.
I tell you what, it's the Moulin Rouge of horror movies. It's what, you know, it's beautiful to look at. I mean, unbelievable set design, the costumes, the music is powerful, and really, it's original. I mean, there was, you know, we've seen movies kind of similar to that before, maybe, but not as far as story goes, you know, about body, you know, parts and this and that, but never done in that way, ever taken to that extreme. It was totally original.
Yeah, it's very good. I'm glad you mentioned set design, by the way. You know, props go out to David Hackle, who did the sets on that. He did. He worked on all the Saw sets also, at least the first, you know, five or whatever, and then he directed one. but these were all done on, fairly modest budgets, too, considering the scope of what we were trying to do and the look. And again, I say we again. the look they were trying to do in all the sets of the circus and the carnival, whatever you want to call it, and the opera itself and the extras they brought and all the cool extras that they dressed. And that, again, all those credits go to the wardrobe and makeup. Because if you look, if you break it down, you'll watch it again because it's so interesting. You'll want to see things, you know, watch it again to catch up the things that you missed the first time. It's one of those kind of movies. And the costuming is beautiful, and the makeup, they've got all these different looks within the same scene. And if you look at my scene's very modest, by the way, and I push this film because it's a great film, not because I'm in it. And I think I look gorgeous in it. I've got this beautiful updo going on, and I'm ready for prom in that baby.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm very proud of my tranny kind of look in this one. So.
It is different, that's for sure.
Now, what's the five favorite projects you've
worked on? Oh, gosh. You do have an accent. I feel like I'm relatively new to this business. I kind of was a late bloomer. I was working behind a desk as a computer nerd for a big corporation for many, 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 many years, and just kind of maybe midlife crisis or something, decided to start pursuing acting. So I started taking theater classes. So anyhow, the point I'm trying to make is, I've only been doing it really full-time for about 6 years and, you know, training for maybe six before that, so 12 years. So every single project I ever get on and have been on so far has been a pleasure and has been a great education for me. The smaller films, you know, the real low-budget, micro-budgets, or those ones, I feel like I'm contributing because I have some experience more than some of my fellow people in the film at the time. And the ones where I'm working on the bigger films, where I'm working with great lead actors, I'm able to watch their process. Ask anybody at these sets that have worked with me, and I'm there days when I'm not working because I like to be on set and watch. So they're all great. Now, you know, obviously Saw 3 was great for my career. Repo was a great enjoy and musical, so I got to do some recording in a soundstage studio and then lip syncing because that's how we did all that. The recent film I was in Insidious, got to work with James Wan and Patrick Wilson and Rose Byrne, and so, you know, how would any of these not be a joy? I worked on a little bit on Mother's Day with Rebecca De Mornay, and that was just, you know, again, how could it not be? She's so beautiful and so talented, as is that whole cast. So, I it's like, what's your favorite song? You know, there's no favorite song. Each one has its special moments and meanings.
Yeah,
that makes sense. When's Mother's Day going to come out? I want to hold it in my hand.
Gosh,
I want to watch
darn
it.
Darn it! I don't know. You know, that movie, I'm just telling you, you know, Darren and I, in case you haven't caught on, we work together a lot because we're like best of friends. I love the guy more than anything. And he's done a lot of films now, and Mother's Day, for some reason, has gone through some sort of distribution snag. I don't know what the deal is. I'm not privy to that. It's, you know, but I've seen it, and it's a very, very powerful kick in the groin type movie. It's not a, you know, feel good movie by any stretch. But I like movies and I like entertaining just to affect people, you know, to make them feel something that they wouldn't, you know, normally feel. Now, sometimes that's good, sometimes it's bad. In the case of Mother's Day, it's just a very powerful piece. It's brutal, you know, I mean, it's brutal. But it's just, I came out of that when I saw the screening, you know, I saw a screening with some of the potential buyers, and I was like, this is incredible. This is his best work. And so it's very frustrating, even for me, just as his friend, to see it not get released and not get its due. I think it was released overseas. I'm not sure.
Right, yeah.
Spent the day in a theater or something. But yeah, I don't even know what the DVD Blu-ray situation is. I've heard, you know, mixed things, but for some reason, it just hasn't hit the shelves. You know, I mean, I think its days of hitting the theater are gone. But if you get a chance to see it at a screener or somehow, I mean, don't steal it and don't download it.
Right.
I'm encouraging that, but it's a very strong piece, and I loved it. I came out feeling again like I was kicked in the groin, but you know that Requiem for a Dream. You remember that?
Oh yeah.
You know how it was such a beautiful movie, but you came out and you're like, oh my god,
gotta take a shower.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I felt about this one, but you know, in a good way, because it was just, the performance is great. It's a great ensemble cast. You know, of course Rebecca was the lead, and all, but we've got, you know, Jamie King, Patrick Flugel, Warren Cole, Deborah Ann Woll, Brianna Evigan, Sean Ashmore, Frank Grillo, Lisa Mark. I mean, it was awesome, the cast. And anyhow.
Well, I got to tell you, the last time I felt that with a movie, you know, Requiem for a Dream, of course, made you feel that way. But the last time a horror movie really made me feel that way was your buddy Michael. I have had the pleasure of speaking with Mr. Rooker myself, and I love Michael Rooker. He's a great guy. But I tell you what, you would never know that by watching Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, because I felt like I had to take like 12 showers after that.
and that's the piece that, you know, I don't know if you get this, is if you know, but Mike and I are actually related. He's married to my sister.
Wow.
So growing up, we were together, you know, when he was younger and dating my sister many years ago, this is back in Chicago, we hung out together, not so much like friends, but, you know, he was the guy dating my sister. So, you know, I saw him, he went to school in Chicago for theater and drama, and then they did Henry, and, you know, I saw it years before it even came out, because it kind of sat in the shelves for a while, and he's just such a powerful actor. I mean, he's kind of my acting mentor idol guy I look up to, because I watched him progress from, you know, from the beginnings back in Chicago doing theater. I went to some of his plays. And he had Henry, of course, and then Eight Men Out in different movies. And he's got a ton of credits. And for good reason. He's just an actor's actor. I mean, his work is so good. You know, I mean, he's still got a lot going on too. I mean, he's of course Walking Dead right now, and
oh yeah,
but there's so much more that you're going to see from this guy, from, because he's just so talented. But anyhow, where was I at?
It's kind of scary, though, because you could say, hey, you know, everyone else, like, yeah, my sister, man, she's dating that guy that owns Hershey's. And you're like, yeah, well, my sister's dating Henry, the serial killer.
Yeah, no, but that's what kind of helped get me, not helped, but encouraged me in my own mind to get into this business, or influenced me, because I went and visited him on sets of some of the movies that he was shooting. And I thought, you know, this looks like fun. You know, of course, it's kind of a jaded outlook, because he's not the norm. The norm is being an extra or being that 12th character in the background.
Yeah.
You know, he's a lead type actor, or, you know, second, third build. And so I was in that camp when I'd go visit him on set, the good food and the, you know, this and that, treated well and all that. but whatever, regardless, it made me think, you know, this looks like a really cool career to try to pursue. So that's one of the influences, my biggest influences, yeah. Mr. Michael Rooker.
Michael Rooker is the king.
Sweetest guy you'll ever meet. I mean, he's the most generous person ever. He'll kick you. You know, I mean, he's a man's man, that kind of thing. I mean, you think Chuck Norris is tough. I mean, I don't, he's got nothing on Michael Rooker.
There you go.
What about your work with The Tenant?
Yeah, the film Lieutenant.
Yeah, The Tenant was a modest budget feature that we shot here in the Southeast, and some friends of mine produced that and got me involved. And it was a great piece. It, you know, it's a couple years old now, and they, you know, it's a modest piece. And whenever you're dealing with smaller budgets and doing independent films, it's very hard to get distribution. So
right.
they've gone through their exercises with that. But it was great. I got to work with some, you know, wonderful people and had a, you know, wonderful time on that. And same with, speaking of the Southeast, there's another film that I had a, just a small role on, but it's going to be a cool film. It's called Casadega, which is going to be screened at Screenfest in L.A. in a couple weeks. And that's directed by Anthony DeBlasi, who brought us Dread a couple years ago. Mm. I don't know if you've caught Dread, but it's an amazing film. And I'm excited, I get to work with him again because they're going to shoot yet another feature here in November called Missionary.
Wow.
And it's currently in pre-production, so they haven't done the main lead casting and things like that, so I can't tell you. I have no idea who's playing what, but I'm just excited to work with Anthony again because he's, besides being a very nice and cool guy, he's a very good director, made the sets feel very, like I was saying, how sets can be stressful. It takes, I think, a calming presence, and if the director can be that, then that really helps the cause, I think. Now, of course, there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that are buffered from us actors, but he just brings to me a light, calming effect to a set. So I'm looking forward to working with him again.
Yeah. Wow, that's cool. That's cool. Now, Jay, a lot of our friends out there are probably wondering how they can check up on you and get in touch with you, or maybe check up on your film work as you're going here. What's a good way for them to keep track of what you're doing?
I've got a website, jaylarose.com, but I'll be honest, it probably hasn't been updated in about a year or two. So I keep meaning to do that. It's one of those, you know, it's on the agenda. There's always good old Facebook. My Facebook name, well, besides looking just by my name, Jay LaRose, I think it's Jay LaRose 1, J-L-A-R-O-S-E 1, you know, after Facebook.com. That's probably the best way. It seems to be still something I, you know, pay attention to. I'm not on it all the time, but that's a good way. And there's on JayLaRose.com, there is a contact, like, you know, it's jfan, J-F-A-N, at JayLaRose.com. That's like an email. But I'll be honest, I don't, if I'm really, really busy, I don't always get to that right away.
How dare you have a life? You're supposed to lay on Facebook 24 hours a day.
Sometimes I'm on it more than I think I should be because it's just fun to watch the absurdness of our culture. But it's
the carnage.
Or you can come visit me. I got a couple appearances coming up. There's a cool horror convention called Rock and Shock that happens up in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
In October. And then I'm doing a. I'm going to appear at a place called Erebus Haunted House in Pontiac, Michigan this weekend.
Wow.
Which is kind of cool. I hear it's an awesome haunted house. And doing a show in Bloomington, Minnesota called Crypticon in November.
Yeah.
Things like that. These conventions, it's opened the doors for conventions, which I really love because I get to meet people face to face and chit chat with them about the business and about the movies I've been in or about other movies and just. Yeah, I dig talking to people, and it's just a great vehicle for me to do that. I want to put in a plug. Are you gonna ask me what I'm working on right now?
You just read my mind. He's also a mind reader. Put him down as psychic, wow. Ladies and gentlemen.
Bam, paranormal. Let's get into the paranormal. Now, I'm working on a film with my buddy Darren again. He's got a production going on called The Barons, and it's kind of about. The Jersey Devil. If you've never heard the Jersey Devil, it's
my favorite subject.
It's a creature, yeah, that supposedly lurks the Pine Barrens, which are woods in Jersey. Hence, the New Jersey.
Oh, that'll
Devil.
Be.
I'll be checking that out. Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah, man, it's going to be awesome. They just started production on it last week, and it's the leads in it are Stephen Moyer from True Blood.
Wow.
Mia Kirshner, who's awesome. And so, again, going back to I get to work with such cool, talented people. So I got to work with Steven last week.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's awesome. And, again, it's shooting right now. I'm assuming a 2012 release date, you know. But it's it's a fun ride. It's a great business I'm in. I'm very lucky. Yeah.
I got to tell you, man, I'm looking forward to that major because I just love Darren's work, and it's just always it's really neat that he reminds me a little bit of Stuart Gordon and you know John Carpenter and great directors of the past, and that he has an ensemble of actors. He really likes to bring you guys back, and that makes it feel like family time for us too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I'm glad you feel that way. And for me, it's awesome because I get to work. Period. I get to work with him, and so. You know, it's for me. It's always win-win, and again, the script is great. I don't want to give any away. You know, I don't want to do any spoiler things, so I won't give it away. But it's really an awesome. It's going to be cool.
We will definitely be
looking forward to it already.
And that's the Barons.
Yeah, I got to check that out.
The Baron.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. A great title too. Well, Jay, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with us tonight. Because man, you are the bomb, man. We really think a lot of you around here, and we want to thank you for being part of the Night Watch family.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you the opportunity to hang out with you guys, on the phone, and hopefully we'll see you again soon sometime. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. We'll definitely make that happen.
If Todd will bring us,
some of us anyway.
Yeah, bring the team.
Well, if you guys would just get in the suitcase.
Yeah, whatever.
Jeez.
Don't store easily in overhead.
Right on.
Amanda would.
Hugh might.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys all take care, and thank you again, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, buddy.
Take care.
Man, that was awesome, guys. Yeah. That was very awesome. Man, Jay LaRose. All of our friends out there, thank you so much for spending your time with us, because we do appreciate it. We love sharing our lives with you, and we love being here every week and doing this. And if it weren't for you, we wouldn't be here. I know I say that every week, but I want people to know that it is heartfelt and it is sincere and it's really true. And without our wonderful affiliates that love the show and take care of us out there, we wouldn't have no one to be able to listen to us.
Yeah, thank you for playing us.
Yeah, to mess with him all night.
Everyone's
I'm getting out of here, Damien.
Fine, then go.
I'm gone.
Go then.
I am.
Go.
I'm gone.
Go there.
I am.
We know what that means. It's time to go. I want to thank Violet again. I'm glad that you're still with us. And thanks to everyone out there for listening. We will be here again next week to torment you a little further.
Yes.
And until then,
spoke to you later.
Good night, everyone.
And pleasant nightmares. Oyusumi Nisai. Night Watch is a production of Jackalope Media in association with Jackalope Radio, with your host Todd Sheets and co-hosts Hugh McClanahan and Chris Weisbach. Featuring voice work from September Day. Also with Amanda H. and Audrey Q., associate producers.
All around me are familiar faces, worn out places. Worn out faces, bright and early for the daily races, going nowhere, going nowhere. Their tears are filling up their glasses, no expression, no expression. Hide my head, I wanna drown my sorrow. No tomorrow, no tomorrow. And I find it kind of funny, I find it kind of sad. The dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very mad. Right through me. funny, I find it kind of sad. The dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very mad.
You can also listen to Night Watch on the following incredible radio stations: World Talk Radio, Livid Radio, Hawking Radio, Planet Tokyo, Sessions Radio, Power 3201, Z106 FM, Haunted Voices Radio, K94 Rocks, Glue 92, Anomaly Radio, Mystic Age Radio, 96.3 Shane FM, Flash FM, Nomad Radio Network, Yapster FM, My Retro Rock Radio, Double X Radio, 1611 AM, Australia, KBMA, Sports and Entertainment Radio, Robin Valley Community Radio, Radio Crackle, Planet Paranormal, The Black Vault Radio Network, Radio Free Bob, KCOR, WCRP AM, 1620, Rock and Talk Radio, The Point 99.1 FM, Extreme Indie Radio, Omnicron Radio, WPAZ 1370, Blast Podcast, KJO 97.3 FM, Indy 104 FM, O Radio, WDSP 101.9 Fox FM, Ghost Village, Switch Pod, Pure Country, Headcase Radio, Slack and Bracken Radio, Future World, Red Finger Radio, Catnip Radio, Scuttlebutt, The Butt at radio.thebutt.net, BNRX Internet Radio for the Extreme, KCIA at KCIA1.com, Extreme Radio Tampa, Ryukin Radio, X100, SRN1, the 1KX Network, KJAG Radio, Random Radio, Riff Raff Radio, Exile Radio, WOQAM Radio, FCN Radio, Graypoint, Brand Name Radio, CKDU-FM, Leafpile Radio, Rocktown Radio, Bizu Homegrown Radio, WWRW, the Worldwide Radio Web, The Dust at www.onthedust.com, Radio Vox, Atlantis 102, Land's Edge Radio, Mix 94.5 FM, 91.5 FM, Ghost Radio, Jet City Radio, Hits 99.9, Extreme Radio 1077, Ghost Radio X, The Beat, Shadows of the Night, East Hill Radio, Hot 97.7 FM, 91.5 FM BVIR, Bearcast Radio, Kudia Radio, World Talk Radio, Surge Radio Network, Radio End, Dragonflight Radio, Beefy Radio, K94 Rocks, Anomaly Radio, Power 3201, and Independent International Radio, Lips 106 FM, Dragonflight Designs Radio, Indie X Radio, The Free Constitution Network, WOQ AM 1690, The Mix 94.5, AM Stereo 930, Radio Enigma, Steel City Radio. If you're an affiliate and your name is not on this list, send me an email and I'll add it as soon as possible. Remember to check out all these great stations for their own days and showtimes for Night Watch. And don't forget, you can listen to Night Watch anytime you want to by going to the audio chamber at www.nightwatchradio.com and downloading your favorite episodes for your own personal paranormal pleasure. And as always, you can hear Night Watch live every Tuesday night right here at 9 p.m. Central on jackaloperadio.com.